The Time Traveling Robots in Space is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
The Time Traveling Robots in Space podcast starts now.
It's Friday, May 18th, 2012, and welcome to another Galactic Netcast. This is the Time Traveling Robots in Space, number 33. From Wausau, Wisconsin, I'm Dave Nelson. And from the Los Angeles area, it's Mr. Swickard. You know what? Your name is fun to say when you take out the Paul and just Mr. Swickard. It kind of rolls off the tongue.
You can call me Mr. Swickard. You can call me that, Dave. I'm also known as Captain Swickard.
Yes, Captain John Luke Swickard of the Starship Enterprise.
Exactly right.
Okay. Speaking of the Enterprise, we got a story about that coming up, along with a whole bunch of other crap. This is a jam-packed show. We have a lot to cover, so let's get to it, my friend. Of course, this is the podcast where we talk about all things time travel, robots in space, in media and news, in sci-fi and science. Paul and I take a crack at each subject, then we break down our recommendations and ask the question of the week. In the future, if you'd like to join us, we do the show normally Thursdays at 9 p.m. Central Time on Spreecast.com, but for some last-minute problems or whatever we had last night, we rescheduled for Friday. And for our Spreecast viewers, feel free to ask questions throughout the show. Questions, comments, we'll take them both. Either type them into the chat room or submit it where it says comment or question. All right, here we go.
Sector 1, time travel.
In honor of the upcoming time travel films, Men in Black 3, Looper, and Looper. I thought there was a third one there for a second. Never mind. IL9.com has put together a list of their picks of the 10 greatest time travel films ever made. Okay, here's the whole list. Stop me if there's any on this list that you haven't seen yet, okay?
Okay.
All right. Number 10, Time Cop.
Haven't seen it.
Haven't seen it. Okay. Number 9.
Great start.
We're off and running. Number 9, Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
I have seen that.
Okay. Time After number 8, Time After Time. It's based on a novel about H.G. Wells chasing Jack the Ripper to 1979, where Ripper attempts to recommence his life of crime in a more violent era. Have you seen that one?
No. Though I think I've read the novel.
Okay. It was based on a novel. Okay. Number 7, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Shocker. I have seen that one.
Okay. I'm getting the feeling that you've seen all the crap on this list, Paul.
Is the insinuation there that Time Cop is good? Because I've heard some pretty awful things about that movie.
It depends on the kind of mood that you're in. It depends on the company that you're watching the movie with. There's a lot of factors involved. It may be good. It may be bad. Depends on how you look at it. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
All right. So back to the list here. Number 6, The Girl Who Leapt Through Time. Have you heard of that one?
That's an anime film, right?
Yeah, it's an anime film about a young girl who accidentally gains the ability to travel through time and uses it to try and fix things in her life, never a good idea, only to fall for a boy who has a secret of his own. Oh.
All right.
I sound like one of those movie announcer guys. In a world.
Okay.
Number 5, 12 Monkeys.
Sorry, go ahead.
12 Monkeys.
12 Monkeys. Yeah, I saw that movie, and I saw it probably too young. I was not that old when I saw that movie, and I was a bit confused throughout. I remember being very confused.
12 Monkeys is definitely a movie that you need to rewatch as an adult. I'm telling you, I recently saw it again, and it's pretty badass.
Well, this was in 95, so that would have put me at 16. You know, not completely, you know, oblivious, but still.
Okay. Well, you've gained knowledge since then. As an adult, you look at things from a different perspective than you did as 16-year-old Paul Swickard.
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm glad that we have that established.
Good.
Number four is a movie that we've all seen and loved, I'm sure, Back to the Future, right?
And I'm sure, dude, if you haven't seen it, and... Oh, weird. Yeah. Yeah. I kind of agree with Evan. Like, why is it this number one? This is like the...
Well...
I don't know. This made me fall in love with time travel movies at all.
You have to realize that this is from io9.com, and io9, they're a bit of... They're some snobs. They're not completely mainstream.
No.
Like, okay, here's an example. I read the headline this morning of their review of Battleship. I went to see Battleship today. It's a kick-ass movie. It's a really, really fun movie, and everybody should go see it. But I bet you that their review is very snobbish, like, oh, it's too much of this or not enough of this, you know? So.
Wait a second. I'm sorry. You saw Battleship today.
Yes.
And your claim currently is that it is a good film.
Yes, it is. It's a very good film.
You and I have discussed this film. Okay. You and I have discussed this before. All right.
Yeah.
Currently enjoying a 35% on the Rotten Tomato meter.
35%? What the frack?
That's what it says.
Okay.
Rotten Tomatoes, Battleship. It's just the way it is.
Okay, it's a good movie. It's a good, and people in the theater with me, I think they liked it too because there was like a lot of audible... You know, you could hear people express their joy over it. I thought it was a... Okay, never mind. Let's get back to the list, because right, we could talk about this all day, all right? Number three is The Terminator. We've all seen that, right?
Sure.
Okay. Number two is Primer, and I'm sure that you haven't... Have you seen Primer?
No.
Okay, it's a really cool independent film that you should check out. It's about two friends who invent a method of time travel in which you can only travel back to the same amount of time they spend inside their tube. They do it via a tube. And they can't travel back to a time before the machine was invented. It's a really good movie, but it's one of those films that you have to watch more than once to get.
Okay.
And finally, number one, and I agree with you guys, this should not be number one, Time Bandits. I only saw this recently, and maybe it's one of those movies that you have to watch as a kid. I didn't think it was that good.
I just saw it today for the first time, and I had caught bits and pieces before, but yeah, I don't think it belongs here. You may be right, it may be a bit of nostalgia happening here, but it doesn't hold up well. It really shows its age. It was made in 81, and I really felt that it, yeah, it was okay. It was okay.
I'm glad that we can agree on something, Paul.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. We'll put the link in the show notes, and we put it in the chat room as well here on Spreecast for io9.com's list of the 10 best time travel movies. All right, so what's your story about?
My story, ironically, is about a video game, sir. I know, and I know you don't especially enjoy the video games. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Anyway, the game that I'm discussing today is about a game called Quantum Conundrum that is supposedly due out this summer. And let me throw the link to the trailer in the chat room. And Quantum Conundrum is a... has a plot revolving a quiet 12-year-old boy as its main protagonist, and one day he visits the mansion laboratory belonging to his uncle, an eccentric scientist and inventor named Professor Fitz Quadrangle.
That's an epic last name.
Shortly after his arrival, an explosion occurred as a result of a failed experiment, causing the professor to disappear. The boy then discovers a special glove with the power to change dimensions, which he decides to use to find out what happened to his uncle. So if you watch a trailer, it's actually pretty amusing. It's essentially a kind of like a, I'm almost going to say like a public service announcement, but almost like a corporate video of the scientists who are trying to explain how time works. And I found it fairly amusing. But basically, the game is kind of like Portal, you've heard me sing the praises of Portal, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, one of the developers in late 2009 said it was one of the co-creators of Portal said whose name is Kim Swift left Valve to pursue more independent development, and Valve being the people who developed Portal in the first place. And he I don't know if it's he or she, but anyway, he/she is developing this project.
Super duper.
So the pedigree here is quite good.
Yeah, I'd say. Yeah. I'd definitely say. No, I would like to see the trailer for this, just to see what it's all about. Sounds interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, from what I saw of it, it sounds like it's just a lot of time manipulation. It looks to be very puzzle-based, like you're going from one area to another, and you have to manipulate time in order to actually get to where you need to be. That was the impression I got. Supposedly, the game is due out this summer on, I believe, every platform. That's one thing that I was confused about. I was trying to figure out which game, like where exactly this game is going to be. And a lot of people are saying that it's on what's called the summer hits for Xbox Live, basically a small downloadable title. But I think it is, but it should be on Steam as well.
Okay. I could see how that'd be very interesting to, you know, the object of the game, like you said, is to manipulate time to get somewhere or to accomplish something.
Sure.
That seems like an entirely new concept in video games.
There's, in the history of gaming, there have been lots of instances of that kind of thing. I'm hoping they take it to another degree. I'm hoping they take it to a degree that we hadn't seen before. Like before, you have in other games, you've had this idea of kind of rewinding time, in the sense of like, hey, you can go back 10 seconds to correct a misstep that you may have had or something like that. But I'm sure there may have been some other games that have gone a little bit further with that, but none that I can think of off the top of my head.
Okay. Yeah, it would be.
But just the creative brain behind this makes me want to play it. That alone makes me really happy.
Yeah.
Makes me really want to play it.
It's a good sign, definitely. And hopefully, like you said, they put a refreshing twist on the whole manipulated time thing. Mm-hmm. All right. So check it out. Again, what's the name of the game?
The game is called Quantum Conundrum.
Quantum Conundrum. All right. Look for it. When?
It should be this summer.
Okay. There's no definite, exact release date?
Not that I saw. They, with smaller games like that, they can get away with having a bit looser. Yeah, they don't have any firm release date. They just said the second quarter of 2012.
Okay.
Which, when you think about it, is not a whole lot of time. So nope. It's the next month and a half.
Yep, exactly. Alrighty then. We would like to know what you think of the stories that we have talked about thus far. Do you agree with the top 10 all-time time travel movies, or are you as excited about this game coming out as Paul is? Let us know. Give us feedback. Go to contact.galacticnetcast.com. You can email galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Call our voicemail number. That is 805-328-3966. Get in touch with us on our social networks. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, all the links at galacticnetcasts.com. All right, here we go. Robots coming. Hang on. Hold on to your seat.
Sector 2. Robots.
Robots. All right. Two people who are virtually paralyzed from the neck down have learned to manipulate a robotic arm with their thoughts, using it to reach out and grab objects. One of them, a woman who was able to retrieve a bottle containing coffee and drink it from a straw, the first time she had served herself since her stroke 15 years earlier, scientists reported on Wednesday. You were going to say something, Paul?
No, not at all. I was just thinking, hey, we're yet another step in the hybrid of human and robot.
Yeah. That would be called the singularity.
Or the cyborg.
Yeah, the cyborg, the cyborgarity. I'll have to figure out how to spell that. What?
Well, I was just saying TM, as in we have just invented a term and we should, you know, make money on it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's a good thing. Okay. The report, released online by the journal Nature, is the first published demonstration that humans with severe brain injuries can effectively control a prosthetic arm using tiny brain implants that transmit neural signals to the computer. The technology is not ready for use outside the lab yet, experts said, but the new study is an important step forward, providing dramatic evidence that brain-controlled prosthetics are within reach. The two people in the study each had a tiny sensor about the size of a baby aspirin injected just below the skull in an area of the motor cortex known to be active when people move their arms or hands. They learned to move a robotic arm mounted at shoulder height on a dolly next to them by watching the researchers move the arm and imagining they were controlling it. With little training, the two participants took control of the arm. How weird would that be to be watching yourself control something that's not part of your body, or for a person that hasn't moved anything themselves in years? That'd be a huge thing.
That's crazy. That is crazy. I think it's interesting. I'm wondering, as you described this, I'm wondering if that having moved something before is a prerequisite. Like, you know, do you already know how to move something properly in order for this to work? That kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. No, I think...
You know what I mean? Like, it sounded like the prerequisite here is, you know, she can imagine having moved something before because she has, but, you know, I'm wondering about people with other types of handicaps who have always been, you know, debilitating.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So people that have always been immobile...
have always had trouble, right.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Good point. Well, there's not a whole lot of...
I don't know.
There's not a whole lot of those people out there. Most people that become paraplegics or quadriplegics or lose an arm or a leg, they have moved things with their arms. They've moved things before. So most people will benefit from this.
I would imagine that's true. Yeah.
The next step.
That's really awesome.
Yeah. The next step would be feeling things. That's got to be something that they're working on too.
What's that?
Actually feeling things, you know?
Oh yeah. Like it giving sensory feedback. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yet another crazy thing like that I would imagine would be even weirder. Like, you know, something that you know is not technically a part of you, like you feeling it as if it were.
But, you know, they're already implanting these things in their brains. You know, I don't see how hard it would be to make them be able to feel something. That's got to be something within the brain, too, that they can figure out exactly where to go to put that sensor, don't you think?
Maybe. I don't know. I know of, actually, now that I think about it, I do know of one biochemist who might be able to answer that question for us. Like he's part of his research is biochemistry of the brain. So I'm wondering how, I would imagine the sensory feeding is a different beast, but I guess I don't know that for sure.
Okay, well, let's get him on the show.
Wheels are in motion. Dave.
Oh, okay. Good to know. I'm looking forward to that. That'd be a very interesting conversation for sure. Mm-hmm. All right. So historic stuff happening. Okay. Robots, your story.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, if there is one link that you should watch from this show, it should be this one that I'm putting in the chat room right now, and we'll have in the show notes. The first one is actually in Russian, so you won't be able to understand it. Basically, the first one that you have there is a description of what I'm about to tell you. A team of Russian researchers are building a conceptual mind transfer android, not to be confused with the phone. Their goal is to help mankind achieve immortality using a combination of humanoid robots and interstellar space travel to get from a dangerous and overcrowded planet. Surrogates.
Moving on. Bruce Willis. Go.
You got it.
This is awesome.
Yeah. One prototype includes torso of an android that will one day have a computer rig that will theoretically be capable of acting as a personal proxy, essentially a place to upload quote-unquote human souls. They're saying that this is going to be possible by the year 2045. So, okay, let's just back up for one second here. The obvious to me from this whole thing that them being the Russian scientists, are taking this very seriously. I still have a very hard time believing any of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch that video, they are dead serious.
Oh yeah.
If they were joking, I certainly couldn't tell. And I love parody. And it's funny because them being a team of Russian researchers, it almost sounded like a communist type propaganda thing. And believe me, folks, I am not normally the one to call this kind of thing out. But yeah, it sounded like the consumer culture isn't concerned with the overall evolution of the species. So therefore, we being the Russian government thinks we need to prop ourselves up and evolve beyond our own humanity. They're calling it, and I'm not kidding, they're calling it neo-humanity.
Oh, that is such a badass name. I love that name. Oh, this has got to happen. This has got to happen.
Okay, a couple of points I'd like to make here. Point number one, I can foresee a world in which you might be able to map one's, I guess you could, if you could divide up the grid of the human mind and turned it into ones and zeros, basically, I can imagine a world in which your consciousness can be copied to a computer. I can kind of see how that might work in theory. But what one important point that they failed to mention, is that doesn't change. I can see it being, again, copied. I can't see a data transfer. What they're talking about is literally plucking out your head and uploading it into a computer somewhere that will act as your proxy indefinitely. So basically immortality.
Wow.
I can see being copied. I can't see just being straight up transferred, because it involves so many metaphysical things that we have no idea how they work.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how to, does anybody have even the slightest clue about how to transfer a human soul from one place to another? Has it ever existed anywhere other than outside of our body?
At least from a scientific perspective? These are questions for the ages. This is stuff that mankind has been trying to answer for eons now. It sounds pretty magical.
And another thing, and this is just more of a basic question: Would you, Dave Nelson, want this kind of immortality?
Okay.
Is this something that you would want to do indefinitely?
If I was dying on my deathbed and there was no other chance of me surviving, I would definitely do this.
Mm.
You know, if this is my only way out to live, I would do it.
Would you do it again and again and again and again?
Oh, depends on how my experience was. My experience being in this new surrogate body. If I liked it or not, then I'd be like, yeah, sure, I'll do it again. But if it sucks, if you're like, you know, if you can't feel anything, you know, if it's like being in a prison, no, I wouldn't do it again.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me. Have you ever seen Death Becomes Her? An older Bruce Willis movie?
Yeah, I have seen that.
It touches on that question, you know, would would you really, really want this kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
And I have to think no, but that's just me. I would imagine at a point it would just be the same old thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Going back to the story, though, one of the things they mentioned was Deep Space. What was the wording on it? Interstellar space travel.
It was. Yeah, they were trying. They were just driving home the point that we, as a species, our planet has a time limit. So it would behoove us as a species to broaden our horizons. I think that was their point.
Okay.
Because they classify it as a dangerous and overcrowded planet.
Yeah, it is becoming that way. 2045, too. That's around the time that the singularity was supposed to happen anyways, according to that guy. I forget his name. The guy that came up with the concept of the singularity.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, watch, folks, I am not kidding. Watch this video.
Yeah.
Your mind will be blown.
And the androids, the they're not really androids, but the mechanical person they show is creepy. It's weird.
Creepy as hell.
Yeah.
It's in the eyes. It's like, dead inside. I can tell.
Yeah, I know. It's Uncanny Valley. Okay. So there you go. We'll put the link in the show notes of the show, and you can check it out for yourself. Okay, the Time Traveling Robots in Space is brought to you by Audible.com. For you, the Galactic Netcast listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to check out their service. As you probably know, Diablo 3 was released on Tuesday. To tie in with this much-anticipated game, Audible also released Diablo 3 The Order by Nate Kenyon, a brand new novel based on the Diablo series. So what are you holding up to the screen that our audio listeners can't see?
This is, you know what, I'm not going to say. This is just for the video listeners. There you go. No, this is this is part of the collector's edition of Diablo. It's just a stupid, it's something to hold a USB drive.
Okay.
I'll show you right here. It's just, you have the little USB drive sticking out of his head.
Ah, I see. Oh, that's awesome.
And, it's just like a demon skull. That's what it looks like.
Well, if you can't get enough of Diablo 3, check out the book on Audible. Again, it's called Diablo 3 The Order by Nate Kenyon, a brand new novel based on the Diablo series. You can pick up our pick or another audiobook free by trying audible.com to download your free audiobook today. Go to audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. Again, that's audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts for your free audiobook. And we thank Audible for their support of the Time Traveling Robots in Space. In space we go in a second after I find the sound. Here it goes.
Space.
And we have not two, but three stories in the space category. And
oh, goodness.
Three huge stories, beginning with this first one. I'm sure that you've already heard about this, but we couldn't not talk about that this week. an engineer is proposing we build a full-scale working version of the Constitution-class Starship Enterprise from Star Trek and has outlined in meticulous detail how we go about doing it. He says the ship, which would be ion drive instead of warp drive, because warp drive does not exist. We can't go past the speed of light. It will have 1G of gravity on board, could be built with current technology within 20 years. We have the technological reach to build the first generation of the spaceship known as the USS Enterprise. So let's do it, writes the curator of the Build the Enterprise website, who goes by the name of BTE Dan. Complete with conceptual designs, ship specs, a funding schedule, and almost every other imaginable detail, the BTE website was launched last week and covers almost every aspect of how the project could be done. The Enterprise would be built entirely in space, having a rotating gravity section inside the saucer, be similar in size as the size and look as the original USS Enterprise and be able to accommodate 1,000 people. Let's see. While the ship will not travel at warp speed, with an ion propulsion engine powered by a 1.5 gigawatt nuclear reactor, it can travel at a constant acceleration so that the ship can easily get to key points of interest in our solar system. Three additional nuclear reactors would create all the electricity needed for the operation of the ship. Huh. This real-life Enterprise, which would be equipped with several single-stage-to-orbit craft called Universal Landers, could get to the moon in 3 days and Mars within 90 days. If you're wondering how NASA could afford it, BTE Dan has that worked out as well. So check it out on his website, which is buildtheenterprise.org. And last time I checked, well, not last time I checked, but the last time I heard somebody check the website, it was down.
It was. Yeah, this thing really caught a lot of speed on the internet. And naturally so. Someone seemingly credible says that we can build the Enterprise. It's like, really? And people start to ask all kinds of questions.
Yeah.
And I'd just like to highlight one thing here. We are talking about not one, not two, not three, but four nuclear reactors on one spaceship. I just want to highlight that.
Nothing wrong could happen there.
No.
But you know what, Paul?
Oh, goodness.
We have nuclear subs, and they don't ever have problems, so.
Ever. No, I absolutely think this should happen.
Yeah.
I can't believe, like, he even went into, like, the funding of it, which I thought was, I mean, it is true. The level of detail here is really impressive. Like, mm-hmm. even accounts for, like, the GDP. He accounts for, like, I think he even accounts for inflation. Like, he's literally putting in the cost here as part of our federal budget. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, we have $761 billion in Social Security, $468 billion in Medicare, and so on and so forth. So he's actually, like, accommodating for all this stuff.
Plus, it would be a boon to the economy because you'd be hiring people to go up there and actually build this thing.
I'm wondering, now I'm curious about how many, like, the kind of labor force that you'd need to make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, and you'd need really, like, talented people to do it.
Yeah. Well, okay, what really impressed me about his plan was, this is the first generation of many Enterprises to come, and it's not like he's trying to build it like overnight. It's 20 years. It's a long-term plan to build this thing. And one of the other points he made on the website was, before this, all of our space programs have been, you know, throwaway stuff. Like, look at the lunar. Maybe if we would have built the lunar program or built the spaceships for the lunar program, the Apollo missions, so we could reuse them and make it a regular thing that we go back to the moon on a regular basis, that we would still be going back to the moon on a regular basis. And I'm just so impressed with how he has everything worked out. And this, he's taken this, speaking of the Russians taking things seriously, this guy seems to be taking this very, very seriously.
Yes, absolutely they are. And so, yeah, it's impressive. I also want to highlight the fact that 90 days to Mars, really?
Yeah.
That's freaking rad, if that's true.
It is, yeah. That is very impressive, and the fact that it's going to have gravity, which no spaceship has been able to pull off before, or tried to do it before.
What do you call it? It's not a centrifuge, but it's a similar concept.
Yeah.
It's basically a centrifugal force to simulate gravity. I don't know what you call it.
I don't know either. Something else I didn't cover on the story was, he wants to be built for three purposes. As a space station. What was the three? I forget what the three are. Space station, obviously a spaceship, and then there was one other thing. But it's one of those things that I could see us just using over and over again as a place to branch off doing other things. Like, we could, like, spin around to Mars and drop people off using these landers and then come back around again, you know, and go here.
Sure.
You know, it could be on a 5-year mission or a 20-year mission in this case, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited about this. I hope it's something that people actually take seriously.
I hope so. It certainly has gotten a lot of traction, you know, on the web. I don't know if it's hit, you know, Washington or anything like that, or even if they could be convinced to do this. I think the total is over 20 years that he wants to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And amount per year, let's see, average year over 20 years is $50 billion. So, yes, expensive.
Yeah. And a lot of administrations in that time, too. So, you know, maybe...
Yes, sir.
Maybe something like this, but smaller scale. Maybe not something quite as big, and something more that would fit our budgets. I don't know.
Harb says Legos. I agree. Let's do Legos first.
Yes. Call Chris Perillo. All right. So that's my first story. I've got another one coming up. In the meantime, what's your story in the category of space, Paul?
Ladies and gentlemen, you are going to be so thrilled that you are listening to this show right now, because I'm going to show you something that I can't believe. I literally cannot believe that this flew under our radar, Dave. But I am thrilled about this movie. And I'm having difficulty describing this, but I will do the best that I can. And also, folks, like, as I'm describing this, you should really watch the trailer at the top of this, at the top of the story that I just posted. Dave, in the last moments of World War II, a secret Nazi space program evaded destruction by fleeing to the dark side of the moon. During 70 years of utter secrecy, the Nazis construct a gigantic space fortress with a massive armada of flying saucers. When an American astronaut named James Washington puts down his lunar lander a bit too close to the secret base, the Moon Führer, let me say that again, the Moon Führer decided the glorious moment of retaking Earth has arrived sooner than expected. Washington claims that the mission is just a publicity stunt for the President of the United States. But what else could the man... Excuse me. But what else could the man be but a scout for the imminent attack by Earth's forces? The Fourth Reich must act. The Fourth Reich.
You know, I swear that we've talked about this before, because I knew about this way last year. So maybe
I don't remember this at all.
Maybe it was on one of my other podcasts, because I do so many of them.
This is so glorious, Dave. Like, oh my gosh, they're like, if you see this trailer, it is amazing. It really, you know what it reminds me of is Mars Attacks.
Yeah.
It has that same sort of feel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just, it's so great. Like, you know what makes me sad about this is as I was reading about it, Einsteiger premiered in Berlin International Film Festival. Take that one. And it was opened in theaters on April of this year. And, you know, a bunch of other countries soon after. This is not in the United States. I looked everywhere, and there is no, like, basically you have to ask for it. Like, there's an area on your site where you could, like, where you could request that it be published in your area. But yeah, as of right now, this is all completely international. Like, the link that I gave everybody was from Australia. But yeah, at this moment, we are the United States. It is not here.
I swear that there is a June release or a July release for this film in the U.S. I thought there was.
I hope so.
Because I was watching the NSFW show Frame Rate Summer Movie Draft Special, and I could have swore that this is one of the movies that they mentioned being released in the United States this year.
Awesome. At least according to the website, it is TBD.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yay for Nazi space people.
Let's see. I'm looking at an app on my phone that says, that shows upcoming releases. And I'm going to do a search real quick. It's called Iron Sky, right?
Sure. It's called Iron Sky.
Yeah, this movie, yeah, okay. I found it. Let's see. Oh, okay. Yeah, this is not... This is... Because it says it was released on January 1st, 2012. So, yeah, maybe it doesn't have a U.S. release. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at a list here of all of the places where this is. And as of right now, it's not in the U.S.
Okay. Damn, I thought it was going to be released here in our country. I was looking forward to seeing this in the theater.
I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will. And if not, then I'm sure we could get it on some form of either digital format or on disc.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we'll get it eventually, but it really just kind of sucks that it seems to be almost everywhere else.
Yeah.
Like it's in, you know, it's in every European country practically.
I want to see it just to experience the person that's playing the president, which is supposed to be...
Yeah.
What's your face? Drawing a blank. From Alaska. Sarah Palin.
Yeah, I caught that.
Yeah.
Like it's a pretty obvious like, jab there.
Yeah. And the movie takes place in the future too, so maybe they're looking ahead going, you know, we think that Sarah Palin's gonna run for president in the next, you know, the next election cycle and she'll become the president, which I hope to God is not gonna happen, because I would renounce my citizenship like the guy from Facebook and leave.
I hope she runs. If she wins, then yes, I'm out.
Yeah. it's like the people that left the United States during Vietnam to avoid the draft. It's exactly what would happen.
It is. It really is. Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Let's see. We'll move to Russia so we can achieve immortality.
Yeah, first. And then we get to see awesome movies like this. So it's a win-win.
Totally.
All right, so we have one more story in the category of space, and this is going to be a big weekend for space-related stuff. In the wee hours of tomorrow morning, that's May 19th, the private spaceflight company SpaceX is planning to launch their Dragon capsule from Cape Canaveral in Florida. The launch window is set for 1:55 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, which is your time, Paul. So you theoretically
yes,
could
sir.
Stay up and not and still get decent sleep for watching this.
I could.
Yeah.
That is quite true.
The historic flight will see SpaceX X's craft go through some orbital ballet maneuvers over the following days, eventually lining up in an attempt to dock with the International Space Station 4 days after launch. And the reason why this is such an epic thing is this is the first time a commercial spacecraft will be docking with the International Space Station. In fact, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, this may be the first time that a commercial spacecraft is actually going to be doing like complicated orbiting maneuvers. I know they've shot rockets up, but they haven't done this kind of complicated stuff before. I think that's the case as well.
That sounds right. I know. Do you know if any commercial space, like, I don't know to what degree like they are defining this. Like, I know that we've put commercial space stuff in orbit, like manned spacecraft, but yeah, I don't know that this is the first time they've ever been able to fine tune those maneuvers in order to actually be able to dock with something.
No, we've never put commercial spacecraft with people inside in orbit before. Space or that one craft did suborbital for the XPRIZE.
Was that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's kind of what I'm getting at. It's like, I don't know. They use some strange nomenclature there.
Mm-hmm. No, that craft...
Like, I don't know what defines what.
Yeah, that craft went up far enough to lose gravity. Mm-hmm. He actually went weightless.
Okay.
And they did that twice.
Okay.
But this is actually going into orbit, circling, orbiting the Earth, and then docking with the International Space Station. This is monumental. People don't realize how big of a deal this is. So
yeah, I mean, SpaceX has been getting a lot of traction, and I'm still thrilled that this is happening. Like, the fact that this place even exists is amazing.
It's a commercial space flight and commercial space things going on in space is going to be a major thing in the next in the coming years. I can guarantee you.
That's the rumor, you know. Like, that's what people are saying, and I think that's I think all those folks at SpaceX are betting on that. Yep. And the folks that are trying to mine asteroids, I think they're banking on the fact that space travel is going to be a very big business.
And there's a bunch of money backing them. I mean, Elon Musk, he's got a lot of money, and then the asteroid mining people have a lot of backers too. So this has got potential. All right, so that's not the only thing happening in space this weekend. We are also getting the annual solar eclipse visible from Eastern Asia, the Pacific Ocean, and much of North American West Coast. So again, not only, Paul, do you get to stay up not too late to watch the launch of SpaceX Dragon capsule, but you get to check out the solar eclipse as well.
Awesome. I shall do both.
Maybe. If you're up to it. With the eclipse, this is the type the moon passes in front of the sun, but because of some quirks of celestial mechanics, it will be too far from the Earth to completely block out the sun's light. Instead, a thin ring of glowing fire will be visible around the black circular that is the moon's shadow. So it's a solar eclipse, but not like a huge deal. It's not going to cover the whole thing. Mm-hmm. All right. That's space. You happy space with the subjects? Do you think we've covered all these enough? Have we fleshed them out, as they say?
I think so. These are some great stories. Like, it's not every day you come across this stuff.
I know. It's a banner week for space, especially. All right. Before we move into our recommendations, don't forget you can listen to the Galactic Netcasts, including Time Traveling Robots in Space. We also have the Alien Invasion and the Sci-Fi Film School, all available on Stitcher Smart Radio on your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, WebOS phones, and now in BMW vehicles on Android tablets and the Nook. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store, or what we prefer that you do is go to Stitcher.com/GalacticNetcasts. Enter the promo code GalacticNetcasts for a chance to win a $100 cash card. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. All right, moving into recommendations. I will start, if that's okay with you.
Go for it.
All right. Mine is a documentary / biopic that I found online yesterday. It's called Space Race. It's a BBC docudrama. It's a combination of both, like, a narrator through the whole thing and actors actually acting out what was going on. It's very, very cool. It's a BBC docudrama series first shown in Britain in 2005, chronicling the major events and characters in the American-Soviet space race up to the first landing of a man on the moon. It focuses on, here we go, Dave pronouncing names, Sergei Korolev, the Soviet chief rocket designer, and Wernher von Braun, his American counterpart. Episode 1 is called Race for Rockets. That deals with the time between 1944 and 1949. Episode 2 is Race for Satellites. That's 1953 through 1958. Episode 3 is Race for Survival, 1959 to 1961. And Episode 4, Race for the Moon, 1964 to 1969. And you can find all these episodes on YouTube. And I'll put the link in the chat, too, for more information about this. It's a fascinating series, and I recommend it to anybody that's interested in space because it really shows the trouble and the effort that these guys put into trying to get us into space. It wasn't an easy thing. It was because not only for the guy, the scientists involved, but for their counterpart governments actually finding these guys and putting them to work first for missiles and defense and delivery systems for nuclear weapons. But just the scientists alone trying to push for, well, first satellites into space, but then humans actually going into space. This was a lot harder than you thought, than you think. They had to do it, like Wernher von Braun was stuck at Fort Bliss, Texas for like 10 years, basically sitting on his hands with nothing to do because he was helping the military develop missiles, and that's not what he wanted to do. He wanted to develop human spaceflight, first satellites, then putting man into space. And one of the only things that made that possible was the Russians putting a satellite into space, and then the race was on. It was all bets were off after that. This Sergei Korolev, he was actually in a gulag. He was sent to prison. He spent 6 years in Soviet gulag, and they had to because the Soviets found all these like the V2 rockets that the Nazi Germany was launching towards Britain. They were manufacturing these, and they found what was left of these, but the scientists were all gone. That was, let's see, that was Wernher von Braun's people. They had left a long time ago. They like moved south. So when the Soviets found these casings for these V2 rockets, they had to search through their records to find somebody in their country who could actually figure out how to make these rockets work. So that's the Russians.
Sure.
And then Wernher von Braun, his people had to escape the Nazis because the Nazis, they were this close. I'm holding my fingers really, really closely together. They were this close to being assassinated by the Nazis because the country was falling to the Americans and the Russians. And they didn't want anybody else, to acquire these people to do their bidding. And that's what the Americans finally found Wernher von Braun and their people. So a lot went into our eventual place in space. A lot of hard work, and I really, really recommend that you check out this documentary. It's like 4 hours long, so you have to devote a large amount of time to it, but it's worth it, man.
Okay. Good to know. And that is what it's called, Space Race.
Space Race, yes. And we'll have the link to the Wikipedia article in the show notes, and I'm sure you can find it pretty easily on YouTube. And just the British, the BBC does such a good job with their series, with anything they do. This is just a typical A-plus outing for the BBC.
Good deal.
All right. So what's your recommendation, my friend?
Pure, simple, go see the Avengers.
Say that again. You were breaking up. You were breaking up. Say that again.
It is pure. It is simple. Everybody should go see the Avengers.
Yes.
I was going to, we recommended this last week, or at least Dave thought I was going to recommend this last week. And I'm going to recommend it this week. I won't spend a lot of time with this. We've spent plenty of time talking about it. So, yeah, you should go see the Avengers. I saw it. Harv in the chat room points out something pretty good. I saw the 2D version. Dave, I don't know which version you saw.
I saw 3D.
Yeah, I personally generally prefer the 2D, but I really enjoyed the film.
I didn't see anything wrong with the 3D. I thought they did a pretty good job with the 3D. I don't have a point of reference. I thought it was fine. So I wasn't pissed off that I watched it in 3D. I thought it was just as good of experience as I would have had in 2D. So, you know, whatever your preference is, go 2D or 3D.
Cool.
What was your favorite part in the whole movie?
Hulk stole the show.
He did.
I really enjoyed the Hulk moments.
He did.
I can't say much more than that because I'll give stuff away, and I would be a horrible human being if I ruined this for you. Just suffice to say, the Hulk has some really amazing, funny moments. Like, you know, and someone told me that, and he was like, he essentially said, he's like, yeah, Hulk was hilarious. I'm like, hilarious? Hulk is a
no,
a raging monster. And like, no, seriously, he's hilarious. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And sure enough, he was hilarious.
Just that scene when you think the one thing is over, but Hulk has the last laugh, that scene is freaking hilarious.
Yeah.
Do you think
is... Yeah, I'm looking for it.
Do you think it's the best
Mark
comic
Ruffalo
book...
supposedly did a lot of the most...
Do you think this is the best comic book adaption to a movie that there has been?
Hard to say. I think over time we will get a bit of better perspective on it. I think the only thing that comes close is probably The Dark Knight. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that I can think of that I would put in the same category. I mean, you have some great superhero, movie adaptations, like, you know, the Iron Man series was great. I would argue that everything leading up to the Avengers is great. But yeah, the only thing that I would come close to that is was probably Dark Knight.
And they're very...
How about yourself? Where would you put that?
Well, they're very different movies, The Dark Knight and The Avengers.
Yes.
Very different tone, filmed a lot differently, different types of bad guy. I would have to say that The Avengers is probably the best comic book adaptation. I also like... What was the... See, I'm not a comic book guy, so I forget these names. The series that was just a short series of books that was never like a full run. It was came out in the 1980s, and they're doing the before now, and the original guy is not involved. Why can't I think of the?
I'd help you out, but I still have no idea what you're talking about.
One of the guys wears a thing over his head, and it's ink blots moving around.
Watchmen.
Thank you. Terrible. No, I think the watch.
You got me with the ink blots. I was like, okay.
You had me with the ink blots. No, I think that's a very good comic book adaptation. I loved that film, even though I can't remember the name of it. Like I said, but I'm not a comic book guy. But yeah, The Avengers, I think it's the best.
All right. Well, cool.
All right, before we, I think we don't need to say anything more, right? Just go see The Avengers.
Yep, you should go see it. People have covered it at length, including us. You should see it.
Before we move on, though, I want to say one more thing about The Avengers. It's amazing that they were able to pull off the best Hulk movie within another movie. This was the best Hulk movie.
Yes.
The two before this pale in comparison to just Mark Ruffalo and the Hulk in The Avengers.
I agree with you there. Well, and you know, that's not to say that the first two Hulk movies were very good. The bar was fairly low. the Ang Lee one, I couldn't stand. That movie was horrible. I wouldn't recommend that to a 5-year-old. A flat no. Ed Norton, The Incredible Hulk, I thought was okay.
Mm-hmm.
I own it and I like it. It's worth the watch, but it's kind of disjointed. Like there's a lot of it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I thought the beginning, like the first third of that movie, was really good. I thought the beginning was really good, but. Yeah, it kind of fell apart at the end. And, you know, Ed Norton, I love him. He's a great actor. I've heard so many stories about how he almost completely tried to hijack the film. to try to edit it and cut it the way he felt it should be cut.
Really?
Like, he was really... Yeah, well, that's why there are a lot of rumors floating around about that, and I can't speak to, well, any of them, but yeah, that's why Marvel, that's the reason he wasn't in the most in the Avengers film, is because Marvel, it wasn't even that he didn't want to do it. Marvel said, no way are we letting that guy anywhere.
We're not working with this guy again?
This thing. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I am... It's really sad that he couldn't capitalize on that, that he being Ed Norton. But, you know, Mark Ruffalo did such a great job. And, it, you know, a lot of folks might say, well, yeah, he did great when he wasn't the Hulk. But I'm like, no, he did a lot of the motion capture.
Mm-hmm.
He was the Hulk. So yep. It's in the same way that, you know, Andy Serkis did it.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, good on him. There's a reason he got the, what, however, how many movie deals did he get? As a result of this,
he
signed on for like a ridiculous,
like six or like something
six,
like that.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy. All right. So there you go. The Avengers and the docudrama Space Race. Check them both out. Before we move on to the question of the week, we would like you to go to our website, galacticnetcast.com, for links. We have links all over the place. Links to the Facebook, the Twitter, and the Google Plus accounts. Also, we have links to all the shows, and we have a link to where you can subscribe to our shows, which we firmly want you to do. We want you to subscribe to the shows. That's a very important thing, all right? Also on the website, links to the news that we post on all the social networks. It's worth the trip to Galactic Netcasts. .com. That's our official website. Okay. You came up with the question of the week, Mr. Swickard. So what do you got?
Dave, I want you to tell me which is the best mode of time travel. And I'm going to give you a few choices here. One, choice number one, the DeLorean from Back to the Future. Choice number two, the orb thingy from the Terminator film. I don't know much more about it than that, other than you come in as an orb thingy. Choice number three, the phone booth from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And I just want to point out here that if you choose the Terminator option, you do have to be naked when you are done. So just bear that in mind.
Well, obviously, I'm going to pick the orb thingy then, because I love being naked. Naked Dave, that's what they call me. So I'm going to...
Absolutely. I mean, he's naked right now.
All right, yeah. I like the orb thingy, although the DeLorean is pretty badass. I think of the choices that you gave me, if I had more choices, mm-hmm. actually choices that I would come up with, I would pick something else. But of the choice of the three, I'm going to say the orb thingy. What would you pick?
Okay. I got to go. You know me. I got to go with the Bill and Ted. A phone booth. You're time traveling in a phone booth. What? How can you top that? What would you? Okay, you know, just for the sake of argument, what do you? What is possibly better? Like, what would you? What would you pick outside of this list? I put this list as a limiter to see. Okay, what kind of person is Dave Nelson? And now I know you're the naked kind of Dave Nelson.
I love
so
being
outside
naked.
Of the naked.
Okay.
Outside of the naked. Outside of the naked. What would you pick?
Hmm. Good question. I don't have a good answer. I was going to say maybe my Hyundai, because I use it for transportation already. So it'd be kind of cool to have a little switch that automatically turns it into a time machine. So maybe my Hyundai accent.
Very good. Hyundai accent. Go buy a Hyundai. I know you're listening. Our sponsorships don't come cheap, all right?
Yeah, come on, guys. Get on it. You got plenty of money. TARDIS, Harv mentions TARDIS over and over again, yes. But I know why Paul did not include that on the list, because Paul Swickard is not a Doctor Who fan. I'm pointing at you, Mr. Paul Swickard.
It's not that I'm not a fan. It's that I have not had enough information to become a fan one way or the other.
Because you haven't watched the show. That's why.
Right. I did start watching, what was it, the BBC Sherlock.
Yeah.
I don't know if that counts for anything.
Oh, well, it's Stephen Moffat. He produces season 5 through 7 of Doctor Who, so something. All right, so there you go. Thank you very much. Good job, my friend. Great question. If you have an answer to our question of the week, leave it on the blog of the episode on the website, or you can email it to us, galacticnetcast@gmail.com, or call our voicemail number, 805-328-3966, and we appreciate the feedback. Don't have any new feedback this week, so get on it, and then we'll feature you on the next edition of the Time Traveling Robots in Space.
Awesome.
That's a warning. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Number 33 in the books, man.
Sweet. We should do it again.
Hey, next week. Fun. How about it? Come on.
Next week.
You know you want to.
Yeah, why not? I do want to. I got nothing better to do, man.
All right, there you go.
Yeah,
then.
Literally.
Yeah, no. Me and you both. Two out-of-work guys. All we do is podcast. It's the only thing that we have to live for is podcasting.
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay. All right. That's just me then. All right. Okay. Hey, you know what? Before we leave,
yes,
don't forget to subscribe again to the podcast. Subscribe,
yeah.
Subscribe. All right?
It's the mega feed.
Yeah, hook up with the mega feed, hook up with the time traveling robots in space. It doesn't matter. We just want your subscriptions. Okay, that's going to do it. Any final words, Paul?
Stay excellent to each other.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.